we are so busy with our everyday life that we forget there is an entire world out there for us to explore. And even when we do remember that we want to see the world, we need to be in a place that we can actually go see it. We need to ask for time off of work. We need a savings account. We need to put our responsibilities to family, friends, whoever, on hold. The ability to travel is really so rare and special that anytime we are given the chance, we have to be ridiculously grateful. All that being said, shit can happen when you're halfway across the world, you don't speak the language, you lost your wallet, or somehow you have found yourself up Schitt's Creek. This is Bitch Out of Water, a show about trying new things. And today, we are talking about our craziest travel experiences. From fuck yes to fails, uh-ohs to woohoos, we've got stories for you. I'm Roxy Stryer. Alongside me is someone who every single time she tells a story about being abroad, she prefaces it with the fact that she is so privileged for the opportunity. Steph's abroad, everybody.
Hey, listen, sometimes gratitude can come out like douchebag commentary, and that's just what happens.
No, it sounds really good every time.
Yeah, for sure.
Just completely working for you. Somebody who is either currently abroad or was raised abroad, depending on how you look at it. Darina, what's up, D?
Hola, hola. Love being the third douchebag here. From Mexico. So yeah, because I lived in Mexico for like 20 years, I really still feel like they're both my countries. Now they're both my countries. But let's see what we actually each consider to be a crazy travel story, since clearly I was born in a foreign place. So this should be interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I feel like some of these are crazy travel stories that I would sign up for a second time. And some of them are like, I would never, ever want to experience that again in a million years. So I'm curious how you guys feel about that. Starting off with Steph, what do you got for us, crazy travel story-wise?
Yes, this one I don't think I've ever shared. It's an adventure, and this is one that I would do again. The next one, not so much. But this one, I was studying abroad in Paris, and what happens when you study abroad is that you have class with people, and you don't really know them that well, but you end up traveling on the weekends when you don't have school with some of the kids that you met in class, or else you have no one else to travel with. So one weekend, there was two people who were like, who wants to go to Amsterdam? And I was like, oh my God, I do. Amsterdam's one of like the top places I really, really want to get to. So it was a guy, and this guy I was kind of feeling in my class. He was like hot and had it going on. And then it was a girl who went to UCLA, and if you know, if you traveled abroad and you met UCLA kids, I don't know why they were notoriously the worst. I have so many friends who went to UCLA, but for some reason, everyone knew the UCLA people were kind of weird. But anyway, she seemed nice, so we went. And I didn't know when we got there, we found out truffles were legal. At this point, I'd never done any hallucinogenic, and I hadn't done like really any drug at all. And I was like, okay, I guess to really explore the culture, right? To be a real traveler, right? I should engage in this truffle game with them. So it was, like I said, two random people, and we're like, let's trip. Let's go to the park. The parks in Amsterdam are so fucking cool. So we go to the park, we take our truffles, which are actually, you can get them at any store, and they like, kind of like if you go to Weed Maps or Leafly, I think it is, it can tell you what the vibes are of the strain you have. It's like relaxed, 50%, happy, euphoric, whatever it may be. So I got this one with like a dolphin and rainbows, and I was like, that's the vibe. So we're in the park and we're microdosing, and we start tripping, and I'm sitting on the grass with the girl. And my first thought is, I have this epiphany, like, holy shit. This park we were just bragging about and talking about how beautiful this park is, but it's fake nature, bro. Like, we destroyed what was naturally here and built a park. And I'm so a part of the system that I think this park is gorgeous when in fact it's fake nature. And meanwhile, the girl to the left at me, we're looking at this tree and the leaves are shaking in the wind, right? And she goes, yeah, look at the leaves shaking in the wind. And I was like, wow, that's beautiful. They're so shiny. And she's like, it's kind of like they're each holding on for dear life. And once they fall, they're no longer a part of the tree. And then my trip started getting a little bit depressing. And I was like, oh my God, the vibes are not dolphin rainbows. I don't know where I am now. So then circle back, the guy that I told you I thought was hot and was the shit comes randomly on a bike. I don't know where he got the bike. And he starts circling us. So we're sitting on the grass and he's circling us in the bike. And then he turned into an evil clown who was circling me in a bike. And it was like the quickest way for me to be like, so not into this guy ever. I could never look at him the same way. And I was like, listen, dude, you gotta leave because you're giving me a really bad trip right now. And then we end up leaving and it's nighttime at this point and we go to this really fun club and it was sick. And by this time the vibe changed to dolphin rainbows because these two brothers came that were so hot and they started flirting with me and the girl I was with. And we hooked up with them on the dance floor and then ended the night. And it was like a really great, I was like, this is how you fucking travel.
Do you think that the truffles were warning you against clown dude? Like, was that his actual aura? And the truffles were like, no, no, Steph, do not do it. This man's trouble.
Yes. Yes. So maybe one of my pro tips is take truffles and see what a guy or whoever you're feeling actually looks like in the truffle gaze, because it was such a quick way. You know when you really shouldn't like someone and you like them and no matter the logics that are in front of you, you just ignore it. But something about a hallucinogenic will make you never, ever see something another way. Like, it's like he is a clown.
You're like, this is Pennywise and he needs to move away from me.
Yeah.
So, Steph, because I'm not really familiar with the reaction to truffles, how does that compare? Like, what's that like coming from Amsterdam versus doing shrooms in the States?
It's very similar, I would say. So at that point, I'd never done shrooms, but then when I tried it in the States, it's pretty similar. I would say like they're brother and sister. They're in the same family. I think that truffles are a little less visual. They're pretty visual, but a big trip on shrooms is unbelievably visual.
Bitch, you saw a clown.
Yeah, I saw a clown.
You saw a clown.
Dude, you saw Pennywise, man.
Don't come at me with they're not visual.
Bitch, you're right. It's a hallucinogenic. They're family mates. Shrooms and truffles unite.
I'm so with you. Truffles are great and being legal is ideal. And Amsterdam does so many things right, and that is certainly one of them. Dee, does your story involve any kind of tripping, and what happened with your craziest abroad story?
Well, it certainly includes a form of intoxicant, and I know that most people would probably think that their crazy stories happen in places like Amsterdam or, you know, somewhere that is not Canada. So when I was tour managing when I was in the music industry, we were touring in Canada, in the United States and Mexico. And actually at that point, I was not the main tour manager. I was just helping out. I was one of the assistant managers, but I was basically helping like book our hotels and like, you know, obviously do like publicity for our artists that were opening for Paul Potts. If anybody remembers Paul Potts from back in the day.
It sounds like a little kid's band. Who's Paul Potts?
No. He's kind of like Suzanne Boyle. Like he got famous for like, you know, singing Nessun Dorma, like popera style on one of those Simon Cowell shows. So we also, you know, have to bring along our glam team, who does hair and makeup for our artists. And you know, you have a ton of people that are part of like an actual tour. And so basically what happened is we are in a rental bus that we had, and we are crossing the border from the United States to Canada. And the glam team decided to open up a bottle of alcohol and just kind of drink their little flask. And, you know, it's like, hey, yeah, we're going to Canada. They're way more chill than in the US. You know, they're super nice and stuff, because that's what we all thought. And as we're crossing, you know, they take our passports and they check everything. And all of a sudden, they make us wait a little bit. And so what happened was they ended up asking us to basically go to like a second security checkpoint. Nobody knew what was going on, right? And then they ask us to go into their little office, like waiting room, which is basically kind of looks like a really pretty jail. And at that point, the main tour manager was asking, has anybody had a DUI? And it turns out that one of the members of our glam team had. And we had no idea that Canada considers a DUI to be a serious crime. Like, it literally, the charge comes with, like, jail time, you forfeit your driver's permit, they impound your vehicle. It's like a whole thing that I guess you cannot enter the country unless you obtain, like, a temporary resident permit or a criminal rehab situation. So we literally, we were not allowed to go in because of this person in our car. We had to go back, spend the night in Buffalo, New York, and figure out a second person that could come with us that could do the girl's hair.
I'm shook right now. I had no idea about this. The amount of friends that I have that have DUIs in their history, who I feel like have gone to Canada, they've all been lying to me, apparently.
They're not going.
No, they're going somewhere else. But Dee, what was the HMU person's response? Like, your hair and makeup artist, what was she mortified? Did she try to deny it at first? Like, how did she react to that? Because that's got to be humiliating and so hard to handle.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, she's one of the sweetest, coolest persons I know. That's like, that's the thing, like, a lot of people look down upon, like, oh, you've had a DUI, you're a criminal, like, even in the US sometimes. And yeah, like, I would not recommend doing that. It's something I don't condone doing, because I've known people that have gotten into awful accidents and there's been deaths and things like that. It's an awful thing. Do not drink and drive. But young people make mistakes, and it goes on the record. And she was mortified. She not only, I mean, this was her job, right? Like, her job for several months to go on tour, and she could not go on the half of the tour in Canada because of this DUI situation. So she was mortified. She's the one that actually ended up helping us find another hair person for the tour. So, like, because she felt so bad. So she obviously handled it great, but she had no idea that was the case, right? Because how would you know, right? Because it's not like you can't enter the United States if you have a DUI, right? So it's a fun little fact there, in case you didn't know.
It's kind of a weird premise that's the one that stands out to them. I feel like if you do the crime and then you do the time, whatever your country's version of that is, then you kind of did it. Again, also, like, D, of course, I do not condone drinking and driving, but, like, if you get a DUI and then you do all the things that come in your country with getting a DUI, I'm sure that this girl had to go to court. I'm sure she had to have a breathalyzer put in her car or whatever the steps were that she had to do. So then I'm sure she did all of that. It wasn't like an outstanding warrant. That's kind of a bizarre Canada rule.
Yeah, and you know, every country has its weird, strange rules, right? Like, I'm sure Canadians think the US is really fucking weird about other shit, but this is something that they think that this, to them, apparently it's a concern that someone with a DUI will reoffend. Like, they will do this again.
Don't let them drive in your country then, but to not let them in? Like, I think it would be pretty outrageous for them to not let someone drive, but it'd be better than and more logical than you just can't come in. This is why we're all anarchists, because rules that don't make sense, I'm not following. Like, this is so stupid.
I completely agree, Steph. However, to circle back to the beginning of the story, that was the funny thing, is that she and the rest of the team had opened a bottle of alcohol. So when we were in the office/jail, I'm sure they saw open containers of alcohol. So I'm sure that did not help the situation.
Brutal.
To be fair.
All right. I'm going to keep the trend going and talk about more substances right now. So when I was 20 years old, my best friend and my roommate at the time, we decided to go backpacking through Europe for 6 weeks. And my goal, being the privileged 20-year-old that I was, it wasn't to see the most sights, it wasn't to have the most experiences or get the most culture. I wanted to hook up with a guy in every country I went to. We were going to 10 countries, and I decided I'm going to make out with somebody in every country. This was like my epic declaration. All my friends were like, okay, cool, rocks, have fun with that. So we were on our trip, and we were on the back half of our trip. And so far, so good. Rox's tongue game was on point. I had found a man to make out with me in every country. we were in Prague, and it was our last night in Prague, and there was this very iconic five-story club in Prague where every floor has a different theme, different types of music. It would be like one would be rap, one would be disco. And so we were at that club, and I've got my – what was really trendy at the time were these cross bags, these bags that would go across your body, and they'd be these little purses with a long string across you. And I hadn't made out with my person yet in Prague, and I'm starting to get a little panicky because I can't ruin my streak. And so I'm with my friend, and we're partying, and we're partying, and we're partying, and I'm getting real tipsy. And I see this guy across the dance floor, and he kind of gives me the eyes, and I was like, ooh, I got my in. So don't know who this guy is, don't know his name, don't know where he's from. I don't know if he's a local or not. I'm just like, that's my makeout for the night. So I kind of barrel on through to him because 20-year-old Roxy had it going on. And I end up very quickly dancing with him, and like almost, I'm going to say within like 10 minutes of dancing with him, we start making out. And then all of a sudden we're making out, and I hear, and I feel my bag get lighter, and then this guy starts sprinting away. And I look, and he has taken my phone, my wallet, every possession that I have in my bag, he's taken and sprinted. I'm like flabbergasted. I'm hammered. I'm in Europe. I look around, my friend's no longer there. And I was like, no. Everybody says be careful, especially when you're in Prague. There's a lot of pickpocketers. But this wasn't like a pickpocketing experience as much as me just being an absolute dumbass, just making out with this guy on the dance floor who I did not know. I finally found my friend. I was like trying to run after this guy. It certainly did not work. And for the rest of the trip, I had nothing. She had to do everything for me. I think my dad, like, I had to call my dad from her phone and be like, Dad, I'm scared. I have no money and no phone. And he was like, you're a dumb idiot. But I think he like transferred my friend enough money for me to be able to live for the rest of the time. And I had to pay him back when I got home or something. It was a whole crazy experience. But I got my makeout, so, you know, was it worth it?
So did the guy who stole your shit, was he connected to the Prague makeout, or was it separate?
It was the Prague makeout. The man who was making out with me reached in my bag while we were making out, took all my stuff, and then ran.
Ah, I'm cackling. I can't.
Yeah, it was brutal.
That is an insane story. Like, I just love that you ended it with, like, but I got my makeout.
I remember, like, being devastated, sobbing, getting back to the hostel, D, and my friend Lindsay being like, well, you got what you wanted. I was like, fuck you.
That's such a bummer, man. But you know what? Like, that the weird thing about it is, like, you never know anywhere that you are, not even when you're traveling. It's like, you do not assume that the person that you're all of a sudden, like, kissing or making out with or hooking up with for the first time, dancing at a bar, is going to steal your shit.
No, definitely not. But it was him. It was him. Like, we stopped kissing. It all happened within 5 seconds. We stopped kissing. I feel my bag get lighter. He's sprinting. And I'm like, it takes me a second to process. And I'm like, no, that can't be real.
I feel like he is truly a whore. In the truest sense of, like, he's a whore.
Yeah. Yeah. Go on, take my money and run. Luckily, at that time,
after he made out with you,
at that time, I think I probably had like $7 cash. I think my whole bank account was like completely tapped. I immediately canceled my cards. But what was difficult is that he did take my ID. And so then for the rest of the trip, I think I had to bring my passport out, which was the scariest part of it all, because if you lose that, you're screwed. Either that, or it was so long ago, something did happen with my passport. I had to get something rushed to me, but it was a whole crazy experience. And you're welcome, Prague man. You're welcome.
Now, let me ask you this, Roxy. When you do make out with a random person at a bar, do you make sure that your pockets are somewhere else?
Great question. It's been a long time since I had a random bar make out. And you always know now I've got no pockets. But I do feel like I am extra careful flirting with anybody now. Like, I will grab my bag. And as you guys know from going out with me, I almost never bring a purse anywhere anymore. I literally almost never bring a purse anymore. I will take a little wallet that is in my hand so that if you try to take it to me, I'll punch you in the nuts. Yep, that's where I'm at. All right, the stories get crazier, but they don't stop coming. Steph's abroad, everybody, with her second abroad nutso story.
Yeah, this one I say in hopes that you don't ever do what I did. So it was my last week of college. So the graduation week, we were just on a fucking bender, drinking every night, staying up all night, partying all night, just squeezing out every bit of fun that we possibly could. I graduated on Saturday, stayed up all night, partied all night. Then the next Sunday, I had to move everything out of my apartment. I, of course, moved it out that day because I was and still am a procrastinator, especially in moving situations. Then by the time that I moved out everything, hadn't slept at all in a week, then get onto my red eye to go to Paris. It's my first time in Paris. I can understand a very, very small amount, and I'm really bad at reading French at this point. I get there, and I'm just delirious, still just fucked up from what I had done to my body the week before. I say this all to say the next few decisions I made were truly and utterly stupid. So I get out. I am beyond exhausted. I'm not thinking straight. I can't read the signs. I don't really understand where I am. I just need to know, get to the address that I have, which is the apartment I was going to stay at for the study abroad. And I get my bag and I see a sign that says taxi. And I'm like, all right, that's all I need at this point. Because I think Uber and Lyft weren't in Paris at this point. I think that's why I was looking for a taxi sign. And I didn't really have phone service. I hadn't figured it out. I was traveling dumb and blind and stupid. So I see the taxi sign. There's a guy under the taxi sign and he waves. And I was like, taxi? And he said, taxi. And so I go up to him and then we walk to the left and there's an elevator that and I was like, okay, that's weird, but I've never been in this airport. I don't know how they do things. If it's like underground travel, who the fuck knows? So I take a fucking elevator down to the basement floor of a random airport I've never been in with a random guy I've never seen in a random country I've never been to. And I get down to the basement. There's no one there. All of a sudden, he pulls out a walkie-talkie from the back of his pocket. And I'm like, that's fucking weird. Why does he have a walkie-talkie? Aren't we just going to get into his taxi cab? I'm looking for like a yellow and black normal taxi cab. He walkie-talkies someone. Within like 60 seconds, maybe, a random blacked-out van, blacked-out windows, all black interior, no license plates, nothing comes pulling up. And I was at this point thinking, fuck, I'm down in a basement. I can't, there's nothing. And now I'm fucked. I'm gridlocked because there's nowhere I could run to easily. Like, there's now a car for these two men and there's me in this basement. And so I was like, my only choice is to get into the car and then try to figure out how the fuck I'm going to leave. Also important to note, Taken had come out. I think it came out like a few years before this was all going down. So my mind starts going, holy shit, Steph, you're about to get taken. You saw that movie. You should have been warned, but here you are. So I get in the car and we're driving. And I try to call my mom and I think of my roommates from back home. And no one's picking up and I'm flipping the fuck out. So I start texting my mom and multiple people everything I can. Tattoo on right hand, ring on the left hand, this picture in the dashboard, this hanging out of the rear view mirror. Any detail I could, I was texting it because I was like, I'm about to be taken. I finally get my mom on the phone And I'm like, and I text her, I was like, I'm just going to put you on speaker. You just need to play along. I think I'm in a bad situation, but it'll be okay. So I put her on speaker and then I hear him talking and I can hear in and out. He's like, she's on the phone with someone. Like it's getting weird. Something like that. Like he starts describing what I'm doing. And I, at this point, I'm sure I'm being taken and almost sex trafficked. So then I change the address I'm going to because I don't want him to know where I'm supposed to go. So I find something like a mile and a half away from the school that I was going to, or the apartment that I was going to be staying in. And I think I scared him enough with talking about everything. I was like, oh yeah, we're passing by this. Oh yeah, we just passed by this. I was just saying every sign that I could see. And then finally he pulled over. And at that point, I realized this, he didn't even have a fucking money thing. You know, when you're in a taxi and it tells you what the time and money is, he didn't even have that. And then he was like, he got on the phone with someone and was like, I don't know what to do, basically. And then they said something like, just drop her off. And then I got out of the car and like, I left and I just walked a mile and a half to my class.
You didn't pay him?
No, he didn't ask for any money.
So he just was like, get up.
I might have left him like a 20 in euro or something like that, like just on the seat, just to be like, okay, no problems, here's all I have, kind of.
But he didn't say anything. He just opened, like he just basically stopped.
I said money and he's like, just get out, like just leave here.
That is insane, Steph. That is basically, that makes me feel like I am Liam Neeson and I need to find him and kill him. But my first question is, what made you decide to actually get in the car in the first place? Was there just like no situation there where you're like, oh, I can, you know, get out of here? Did you feel like that was the smartest move?
Right, like go back in the elevator or...
Yeah, so I'm pretty... Like, my mom trained me in a psycho way to be really hyper aware of situations like this and to not be in situations like this. So by the time I had kind of woken up and realized where I was and what everything looked like, I was in this basement parking garage, essentially. There was no exits in sight. Like, we were in the back corner of one, so I couldn't see any daylight from where I was. And to wait for an elevator, if they were actually dangerous, seemed like a non-option. Because what am I going to do? Press the button, and then if it doesn't come, like, I'm just chilling there waiting to be snatched up. And then I didn't want, and then I thought, like, okay, if they snatch me up, then they're going to tie me up. And then I have, because when we started driving, at that point, I had thought, I'm going to stop, drop, and roll. Like, I'm literally going to open the car door and roll out. So that was my game plan. If I started to see that he wasn't going to take me to the spot I was supposed to go.
Because the number one rule is do not go to a second location. Like, do not get in the car is the number one rule. Do anything you can, claw, kick, scream, like, and that is not what you did. You went into the car. You were on your way to the second location. Is there any part of you who's like, maybe I misread the situation. Maybe they weren't trying to take me.
I was in the front seat too. So that made me a little more at ease. Like, they opened the front seat door seat. So I wasn't in like the back.
It sounds to me like they were. I'm just curious if looking back, you're like, what actually was happening there?
Okay, so I did think about this. There is a reality in which they were fraudulent taxi cab people that wanted to get like a quick buck in a way that wasn't organized or actually real. And maybe they thought I was like a narc or something like that. And that I was gonna tattle on the business that they were doing. And they were like, we don't want to deal with it, so we'll just give you the ride for free. That could be it. Like, they could be an unregulated.
They were definitely doing shady shit. That shit could have been trying to take you for one of 50 reasons and or trying to make money off you and or trying to steal things from you. Like, any of those things could have been possible.
Yeah, it could have not been trafficking, but it's so prevalent in Paris. And I had just seen that movie that I was I don't know, maybe it's like sometimes you convince yourself of something, but also I believe in women's instinct, and it was fucked.
Damn, dude.
That's insane, man. I mean, you're right that we don't know and we'll never know, and I'm glad we'll never know. But you got some balls to get in the car, I have to say.
Yeah, I guess the lessons I would say are what Rock said, never get in the car. Never travel to a location that's not where the location's supposed to be. Like, I don't know why. No one's ever said that because I don't think no one should. But if the taxi says taxi, it should be outside. It shouldn't be anywhere.
It makes sense, though, being in a different country. You're like, they probably do shit different here.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was drunk still, like, I wasn't thinking, but I learned that day.
Well, that day could have saved some other day from being the worst day of your life, so we have to be grateful for our almost moments, even though that one is insane. Dee, what is another crazy travel story from you? And I'm glad you're both still here and neither of you have been taken.
Shout out to Liam Neeson, I guess. Well, since we're talking about worst days of our lives, I think you guys can be included in this worst day of this travel life, where my husband and I, as a lot of people, could not afford to go on a honeymoon for several years till after we were married. And so we got married in like 2012, I think. He knows better than I do because I suck at these things. And we went... In 2016, we decided to go to Paris. I'd never been, and I have always wanted to go, obviously, because I love their food, music, all of the things, art. So for some reason, we decided to travel literally on Tuesday, November 8th, 2016, Election Day in the United States. That is the presidential election of Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton. Two awful choices. Where, obviously, we were hoping for the least shitty person to win, in this case, which was obviously Hillary. And so we basically arrive into Paris. We had this very small but beautiful Airbnb, gorgeous view. I felt like I was Belle and I could, you know, shout out the windows, bonjour, 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 and see people walking around eating baguettes. It was beautiful. So we go to sleep seeing that the results are just going to start coming in because of the time difference. We wake up the next day to the actual results. So we go to bed thinking, all right, so I guess we might get our first woman president, even though I'd rather have it be another woman. But we don't want this mofo who's a tyrant to win. So we wake up hopeful. Brennan looks at his phone and he just goes, oh, shit. And at that point, I was like, I kind of knew this would happen. I was like preparing for the worst, but it was really fucking weird to wake up in like a beautiful city outside of the US to this news. And it was interesting to kind of go through the motions that day of the situation, right? Because at that point, we understood that the Electoral College had decided that even though Hillary won the popular vote, because America's very stupid that way. So we were pretty depressed in Paris when we woke up, our first morning in Paris ever on our honeymoon, because that happened, right? And it's a very bizarre thing. But the funny thing was, is that we decided we're in fucking Paris. Let's go walk around. It's a beautiful city. And everyone there did not give a crap, right? Like, it was the news was on different restaurants and coffee shops. Nobody gave a shit. That's what was so funny about it. Like, we walk into a restaurant and this man who's the owner in a super good mood, he's like, oh, come in, you know, and what do you want? And he's like, why you look so sad? Americans, are you Americans? And we're like, yes. And he's like, it's just politics. It's just politics, you know, which to us, we're like, sure. But, you know, these things do matter. But I did, like, their spirit made me feel a little bit better, because the thing about the French is that unlike us, they don't have police and law enforcement that have military weapons. So when the French government gets a little fashy, the French really, really appreciate their freedom much more than Americans. They will go out there and fuck up some cop cars. And I do not condone violence, but it is interesting how much they cherish their freedom and that they just think that Americans are just crazy, right? And they think that the way that things are done here are just so ridiculous. And they probably saw Trump and Clinton as like a reality show, which unfortunately it is, right? So it was really interesting to like be there with a completely different perspective. I don't know if that made it a little bit better, but it was just a bizarre experience. And we ended up walking that night by Notre Dame. It was beautiful. Brennan sang some Hunchback of Notre Dame. It was like the least shitty way to, I guess, spend that day.
I think that both Dee and Steph are more tied into foreign politics than I am. But oftentimes there will be a country with an election and I won't know who is running, who won, or that it was their election day. Did it seem like Dee, even if they didn't give a shit, that everyone in Paris was aware that Trump had been elected president? Or are there some people who were just not even aware of American politics at all and didn't even know that there was an election day going on?
I think it was both. I guess the difference that I see in a lot of countries, including Mexico, my own country, and the U.S. is that the U.S. seems to have a lot of respect for its politicians until recently, versus other countries do not. Right. So when these elections happen, they're like, yes, of course it matters because the U.S. can make an impression on the rest of the world. But to them, they're like, oh, these people just seem like idiots that they're electing. I think that's most of the French from what I saw.
It's a massive country. And, you know, Paris is so different from the rest of the country. I have family in France and it's like almost like a war against Parisians. It's kind of, I guess, how a lot of people in America feel about Hollywood, that it's in Los Angeles and California. It's completely different from a lot of it. But I'm curious how much their view changed on that American election specifically after 2016, because I remember, I feel like it was by like 2018, we were the laughingstock of the world. And a lot of international news coverage was based upon Trump embarrassing us and them all joking about it, which was something I had never seen before growing up because, and I'm sure you guys have international friends too, who are like, we used to think America was the shit. Like, we thought y'all were the best. And now it's kind of like the curtain flew up and they're way more awake, like we are, to what is happening.
Definitely.
Yeah, totally, Steph. And I think the other thing too is that a lot of other countries, including France, already looked down upon Americans. Like, you know, when the Bush-Iraq war happened, there's so many things that the U.S. has done that outside of this country, it's not like people think, ooh, America is great. Like for our families, you know, and that are immigrants, they think it's great. That's why they moved here, because for the opportunity. But for a lot of other people, they can see the damage that American imperialism has done. So it's a very interesting thing there. And it's funny to like mention Bush, because you're right that you thought Bush was stupid. Wait till you meet the stupid tyrant.
Staying in Europe, because Europe seems to be the theme of the day, take or leave a Canada story. But when something that is a bizarre experience of mine, one might call it crazy, is my sister, my little sister, who's 5 years younger than me, was studying abroad in Barcelona. Barcelona. You're welcome. And when she was there, she really wanted one of our family members to come visit her. She had been there for a few months. It was something that we had talked about possibly doing. She was feeling a little bit homesick and understanding that if we weren't able to make it, we weren't able to make it. But she kind of sent out a group text to us being like, does anybody want to come visit me? And for those of you guys who don't know, my sister is my life, and there's nothing in the world she could ask me to do for that I wouldn't try to move heaven and earth for. And I had 2 days off of work, and I couldn't take more than 2 days off of work. So I did a 48-hour trip from Los Angeles to Barcelona. And it was the craziest experience ever. I found last-minute flights that were like $750, which for round trip from LA to Barcelona is really, really good. And I knew I was going to be staying for free because I was staying at her apartment there. So I ended up traveling there, and we really only had like a day and a half together. And I was like moving the world to make this happen. So we wanted to go to this place called Tipidabo. Have either of you guys ever been or heard of Tipidabo?
No.
Is that like the 9th floor?
No, no. So Tipidabo is like a theme park with a castle in Barcelona. And it is so bizarro. I hope this word is okay. It's so janky. Like, it is. You go there and it's like, uh-oh, what's happening? Am I going to get, what's going to happen here? Like, everything seems like it's hanging on by a thread, but it's still really cool and fun. So we were spending part of the day going there. It's just a train ride away, like a 20-minute trip. So we get on the train, we go there, and there's all these rides. And we're looking around and we're like, are these safe? Like, there's no standards. It's just like these big clunks of metal machines that are in the middle of Tipidabo. And then this beautiful castle next to it. So we get a little tipsy. We're kind of wandering around it. We go on this one ride. You're in a metal basket. And the basket just kind of like goes up and then around and down. And we're in it. And I honestly felt like we were going to die. I go on every ride. I'm not somebody who really usually gets very scared on rides. We're in the ride. It's like every single creaky sound. We do this whole thing. We finally get down to the ground. We're both kind of like shook because I was like, oh, are we good? We finish the day. We go home. I Google it and like mad people die at Tipidabo. Like I look, somebody died on that ride a couple years prior. Like, just deaths at Tipidabo. Like, all these news articles start populating, people getting injured, 15-year-old girl dead, like just mad people getting injured, hurt, or killed at Tipidabo. And I was like, I'm so glad I didn't look at this beforehand. Like, it just felt like if the three of us decided to make a theme park with no idea how to make a theme park, but it was fun as shit. But it's like, that's the risk you're taking. You want to go on the rides, you just go on the rides. It was a wild experience. We both bought, they only had kid shirts, and we both bought, I still have it to this day, large kid t-shirt that say Tipidabo on it. And it looks like a bra on me, but I wear, anytime I'm like really missing her, I squeeze into the Tipidabo shirt and I'm like, all's well that ends well, baby. It's okay.
I thought you were going to say that you got a shirt that said sobrevivi Tibidabo, which is like, I survived Tibidabo.
I survived. Yeah. I wish.
That's pretty funny, Roxy, because this is probably one of the stories that I'm like, of course it sounds crazy. It's not as crazy to me because I went to theme parks in Mexico and it's similar that way, right? Where you're just like, shit could happen and people take the risk. And shit's not as regulated as it is in the U.S. It's one of the, I guess, pluses of living here, right? The safety guidelines and things like that. But that's just how it is in a lot of countries. It's crazy.
Definitely. I started went down a rabbit hole, D, and it's like, this ain't no Disneyland. Like, we're a park. If something happens to you, that's on you. Hold on. Hold on for dear life. Don't fall out.
Yeah, it's you on you. It's like dying at the caliber of sister you are, but also the fact that I know that you continued to do more rides after that first ride. And when I went to Madrid, and one of the one major takeaways, I only had like 24 hours there, but when you walk, you see like almost every quarter mile, there's incredible parks that are built and they're almost all wood. And you go and it's like American Ninja Warrior style, like unbelievable types of relay race type setups that you could do, pull-ups and monkey bars and climbing and ropes and shit that I instantly thought. My first question was, why don't we have this in America? Quickly after that, my second, not question, but answer was, oh, because we sue the fuck out of everyone. We would never have this shit. So it makes sense that an amusement park would be in the same vein.
Totally, Steph. And that's also a more recent thing, right? Like, I remember when I was a kid seeing American news around the 90s that somebody got burned from a McDonald's coffee cup. And so that's when they started adding labels to their cups, like caution hot, because they got sued. So I'm assuming that that's like what started this trend, right? Like 80s or 90s of like America being like, oh no, then we're going to get the lawyers in. So we got to do all the things.
Absolutely, Dee. Anytime I see a weird sign, I know it was accompanied by a lawsuit. Like anytime there's something bizarre and I'm like, oh, well, they legally had to put that there. Like on all of the cigarette packages where it's like smoking can cause cancer. And it's like, my dude, did y'all not know that?
Right?
They have like rotten teeth like printed on the labels. I'm like, damn, that print cost must have been exorbitant, but probably not more than your lawsuit that you got.
Well, who sues a company for getting burned from their coffee?
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't want to work anymore, Dee.
That's true. A lot of crazy abroad stories. I know we got a couple of different Patreon questions. Dee, can you hit me with some of them?
Yes, patreon.com/theworldgirls if you want to be featured in our podcast. Ask us all the questions. Hang out with us. We have a very cool community. Jimmy Nails wants to know, if y'all could live in any other country, where would it be and why?
That is fun. Steph, you got one off the top of your head?
Yeah, London. And then I think once I go to Tokyo, that will also be there. But right now, just London.
Okay. Dee, what about you?
I love France, man. I totally see what Steph is saying, that Paris is different than the rest of France. But I've gotten to go to not many parts of Europe. And it's a beautiful fucking city. And it's got everything I want. Museums, music, French EDM, amazing food, and people that leave you alone. Those are my people. Because people are like, oh, Parisians are really, really weird and don't say hi to you. I'm like, that's fine. Those are my people.
I think that mine would be England, more specifically London, because you guys know me being an annoying realist. I'm like, they have amazing theater there. I speak the language, so there wouldn't be much to acclimate with. But then, like, my dream place to go live for a little bit always has been Italy. I just think it's the most incredible country every city that I've gone to there, I'm just like, whoa, this is so beautiful and so amazing. And the people here are so lively and sexy and wonderful and treat you really well.
And they have the city that holds the largest amount of people who are over 100.
Really?
Yes.
And I know that's why Roxy wants to live there.
For sure. And it's for the exact reason you would think, not poisoning people with the food that they're eating or the water or any other thing, and walking. And what? Yeah, it's the walking. So
yeah, I mean, that's a lot of places like that over there. Same with France, man. I didn't get a stomach ache from anything I ate over there. It was wonderful. We also got a question from Glenn Caesar, who says, what's your longest trip abroad? Preferably a fun trip, but I'll leave that up to you all to decide.
Did you say preferably a fun trip?
Yes.
Man, if you're going abroad for a long time and it's not fun, that's on you. Come on now. It was the one that I spoke about for me, the 6-week trip to Europe. I have never done even anything close to that. I did a 2-week trip to Israel once. That would be my second longest for Birthright, which people know is that free trip that Jews get, which is actually an awesome opportunity, but you got to learn to think outside the box. I could do a whole episode on Birthright at a different time. Steph, how long is your longest trip?
I think it was 3 or 4 months total.
That's when you went studied abroad?
I studied abroad and then I traveled like a month or two separate from when I finished the program.
Dee, what about you?
I mean, if you don't count the 20 years I spent living in the United States after I moved from Mexico.
It's a long ass trip, bro.
Yeah, I think it was when we had a lovely trip as a family for my mom's birthday. And we got to go to both England and France. My husband and I went to France, but we basically had a week in Liverpool because of the Beatles. And it was amazing. It was so cool seeing my mom and my brother dance to Twist and Shout at the Cavern and things like that. So that was like our longest trip and it was really, really fucking cool.
So Dee's longest trip is either 20 years or 1 week. Who's to say?
Correct.
Who's to say? Very similar. I know we've gone over a lot of crazy experiences, but just to break down the pros and cons of traveling, I know there's so many pros, but if you had to say your number one pro of going abroad or of traveling, what would it be, Steph?
Your worldview is more than just what's in the few acres that are in front of you in your city. Like, it's a completely earth-shattering feeling to know that there's more than just what you knew or know.
And that's how you feel when you have the privilege of going abroad.
The privilege. Yeah, it's kind of like having like a mind orgasm because of the privilege to study abroad.
Dee, what about you?
I mean, I concur. You get outside your bubble. Even just living in Mexico and traveling to the States is a completely different thing. Just crossing the border is a completely different culture and different foods, different. It's just diversity. The coolest thing for me, though, is just hearing other people speak different languages. I think it's beautiful. And it just reminds you that English is not the only language in the world.
It is the best one, though. Am I right?
2-2-2, right? There, there, and there. Yeah.
Ay, salieron mis gringuitas.
It's the worst. So I think my biggest pro is no surprise to anybody. I'm such a people person. It would be the people. I find, number one, I get along with people in other countries very well. They kind of like get me a little more. But number two, they have way better stories than a lot of Americans have. Like, when you're listening to people at pubs or bars or anything abroad, they're so generous. I'll never forget like being in Greece and having everybody be like, come, and not in a creepy way, come stay with me at home. Do you want to travel? I'll take you there. I have a boat. I could bring you to that island. Like, just being, and again, not in a creepy way, women, men, whatever, kids, just like, oh, do you need recommendations? And that's just not how it works here. So the people abroad, that's a huge generalization, obviously. But compared to the people here, I'm like, chef's kiss. In heaven about it.
Yeah, bro, getting out of America, it's so true. Like, people just live different. Specifically, people in Europe live way different than a lot of the world because of their access to many countries very easily. I think that we didn't mention this, but it's got to be another reason why Roxy and I know I picked London. You can get to hundreds of countries in few hours or less.
And everybody speaks like 5 different languages. It's a beautiful thing.
Just like me and Steph.
And you can drink before you're enlisted in war.
Wow. Damn. A lot of good pros. Some cunts of traveling. I know this one's a little harder. I will say that the one that I'm going to put off the table because it's our cunt every time is finances. We know it's expensive. That is the biggest cunt of traveling. But is there any other cunt for you guys? Dee, what is your main cunt other than the loss of bank account?
money. More problems. So I think when I found myself traveling abroad, it's not so much that I miss the U.S. or I miss Mexico. Like, it's being bicultural. I feel this every day where there's just some things that I'm always going to miss about my home country. And so even though if I'm in Mexico and we get to take like 2-hour naps during the day as we're working, I miss that when I'm in the U.S., right? But if I am in Mexico and I want to order food, there's no Postmates down there, right? There's none of that. So
you're like, I have to go get it? Shit. That actually is a really sad but beautiful sentiment, Dee, that because you have 2 really solidified homes, you're only ever kind of like 90% home because there's always that part of you. I never thought about that. Damn.
Totally. And to your point of the pro about you just love the people. I mean, we talked about it on my Mexico episode where it's literally that. Like, I love America. I love the United States. But damn, y'all are way more individualistic than other countries.
Neighbors what? Neighbors who? Steph, what about you? What's your biggest con?
Planning. I don't like planning shit.
You?
Yeah, right? You can do a lot of it on the go, and I actually suggest that. Like, be ready and able to do whatever the fuck comes your way. But you do have to plan, like, where you're staying, how many days, the flight. I got a lot of day of flights. That's still planning, though, and it's fucking, like, can I just be there?
And expensive to do the day of thing. My biggest cunt is similar to a Steph story. I've got a few of them, not that crazy though, is safety. When you're abroad, you just are not as safe as when you are home, no matter what country that is, because you're not as familiar with your surroundings. And I am somebody who loves to cut loose, love to get drunk, love to wander, love to be a free spirit. And when I'm abroad, I always have to have that thing in my mind, like, and literally abroad anywhere, like, don't fuck this up or you don't know where you are right now. So
you're not protected also by your country in the same way.
Right.
Free BG.
Free Britney. Yes. You and I are on the same page. All right. Love hearing your stories, guys. And thank you to everyone at home for being a bitch out of water with us and hearing about our crazy abroad experiences. We appreciate you listening and we would love to hear yours. So leave a review on the podcast. 5 stars, of course. Subscribe, tell your friends. And if you want more of us all the time, go to patreon.com/theworldgirls. That way you can watch our podcast tapings live, you can ask questions, and you can even video chat with us. We go live on youtube.com/theworldgirls every Wednesday and Sunday. And don't forget to follow us on social media, on Twitter and TikTok @theworldgirls, and on Instagram @worldgirlswap. Stay safe in your travels. Dare to live the life you've always wanted, whatever that may be, wherever that may be. And of course, stay wet, my friends.